everybody. Welcome back.
Let's do it.
Right. So we talked about the FIFA international break. However, every league wasn't on a break this weekend. So the domestic league, the National Women's Soccer League, or NWSL for those who are sort of familiar with it, still played. In fact, they kicked off their Challenge Cup, which is their preseason tournament.
Yes, sir.
Started last year. First successful team competition to be carried out in the country in the pandemic. It's been a source of conflict, right, with the FIFA window, just because a lot of our prominent players and national team players aren't able to play for their club teams for the first two or three games, depending on who they play for. Mm-hmm. And I think players have spoken about that. Nonetheless, Challenge Cup kicked off on Friday. And so we're going to get into that. We're also going to quickly touch on the collective bargaining agreement that's coming up for the NWSL. It will be their first. And just a few of the highlights that we think should be in there. And then we're going to jump into the action, because there certainly was action.
Yep. Because Chaos Cup. But yes. Let's start talking about this CBA.
Yeah. So I think just thinking about what this could look like, and some of it we got from the WNBA CBA, which is a completely different conversation, right? That league has different needs, different amounts of players, that kind of thing. But we took a couple of cues from them, and we'll gladly post that link directly to that CBA for you so you can take a look. It's a lot of reading, but we hope you dig through it. But for the NWSL, I think to become a fully formed professional league, that's sort of what we're aiming for here.
Mm-hmm.
A few things that we need to touch on. I think the homie Sky and I both very much agree that league minimums need to be raised.
Yes, they do.
It's not high at all. Like, most people in education are going to start like entry-level positions making more than professional athletes make as a minimum. And that's not a knock, right? I think both of those professions should be making more money, but just to be comparative, that's really not the case with almost any other professional league in this country.
Yep.
And we want to treat these athletes, these women, our non-binary siblings who are playing in this league with the respect a professional athlete deserves, right? And that includes paying them more in terms of minimums and quite a bit more, right? Sort of the higher five figures would probably be a good place to start so that they don't have to take on second and third jobs.
Yes.
Even though they're playing, you know, 8 to 9 months out of the season. So with training and preseason and everything else, we want them to be able to be sort of free and happy to play the sport that they love and provide for their families or themselves. So that's one. What else are we looking at?
So also we're looking at in terms of like setting a time frame for player rights retention and then actually laying down equivalently to free agency. But in all honesty, a transfer type of agreement where players aren't treated as assets. They're actually treated as human beings so they can dictate where they go, when they go and how they go. Even if you got to pay transfer fees, so you don't have these incidences where players are having to go overseas to correct what's going on with their player movement because trades are happening without their knowledge, or they're getting sent to places that they didn't want to without any kind of input, whether it be an expansion draft, whether it be a dispersal draft, whether it be just any draft, or even within the season. Really giving and having owners and front office individuals really be considerate of players' desires in terms of where they want to go, similar to what happens overseas. Yeah. I mean, I think this is particularly important because in international leagues, they have the transfer windows. They don't trade. They don't do this crap that happens in this country.
Right.
You have to tell them where you want to go. And so I've heard too many horror stories of international players coming over here and they thought they were playing for only one team and they get traded out the blue. Even sometimes the same year to a team that may not be as professional, may not be what they desire to come over here for, and they're stuck. And so you really need to change if you're going to be a professional league, the way you treat the players and have them have influence in terms of their rights. Because that's important.
Yeah.
And what else?
You know, some of the standard stuff, and I'm sure this is being worked on, but like family leave, medical leave, preferably following some sort of, you know, state or national guidelines there, but giving people the proper amount of time to heal if they need to take off from their professional job, which in this case is being a soccer player. And the window for professional athletes isn't long, right? Like, at most, you're playing maybe from 18 to 30-something, 40, early 40s if you're lucky, right? Depending on where you play. So they have at least half their life reasonably left after they've ended their careers. And so really giving them the training that they need post-career outside of soccer, but particularly in it, because a lot of them want to stay in the sport. And so whether that's the coaching tree, whether that's management, whether that's being, you know, a physio or a nutritionist, or, you know, working on staff, public relations, being agents, whatever that looks like, and wherever they can really help impact the growth of the sport in this country, I think offering them post-career training and guidance would be super helpful. And part of that is changing the access to these things, right? Like, it's expensive to get into coaching, and it's usually pricing people out, particularly underrepresented groups. Just really giving them that advantage, right, to be able to stay in soccer if they want to, and if not, giving them other opportunities.
Particularly because, like you said, they only play for a short window, and so people have to realize, like, if you're asking somebody who's in their late 30s, early 40s to then start a new career, mm-hmm. and you have not provided any kind of post soccer career perspective, they're jumping into a job market where they're going to experience the sexism, potentially the racism, and then the ageism, because they're going to be like, huh, don't you have experience? And then you're like, no, I play professional soccer, and there's no support. So that these are important points that need to be addressed. Also, we're talking about revenue sharing. You're getting all this revenue. You got these partnership deals with Nationwide Insurance and Ally. Like, it's important that these players see return on their investment in putting their bodies on the line to play the game. And you treat them like human beings and not just assets.
Yes.
Because they are why you are making money. Right by these players.
Absolutely. And it needs to continue. So, you know, props to the league for starting to find ways to get more money in these players' pockets, right? And you see what's happening in England with the Sky Sports BBC deal, where it's a lot of kickback to those players and those clubs that are already richer than the clubs we have. Some of them are, not all of them. We want that kind of environment for our soccer players here. And so I hope we are edging toward that. We'll see what the CBA looks like. Hopefully they'll be able to hammer it out this season. And once we do, we'll be sure to talk about that on Shea Butter FC. That, we jumping in?
We jumping into the Chaos Cup. I mean, the Challenge Cup and the Stallions of the weekend, because it was every bit of the chaos. Yeah. So we're starting off with Friday?
Friday night, yes.
Friday night, we start off right with the Houston Dash playing the Chicago Red Stars in Houston. Yes. And what ended up being a 0-0 draw.
Why
is that?
Not a whole lot to analyze. It looked like the first game of a preseason tournament. It looked very disjointed, sloppy at times. Some of the tactics worked a little, right? The finishing was very bad. Again, it's a preseason tournament, so that's to be expected. And I didn't think either team looked particularly great in the first half. I thought the defenses sort of shined in that. Shout out to Casey Krueger, who plays for Chicago, part of the Shea Butter delegation.
Hey, what's good?
So in Shea Butter bricks, as the homie would say, right? She is a wall. She's probably the best 1v1 defender we have that I have seen, right? I don't want to negate college or some of the other leagues we have.
Mm-hmm.
But she's the best 1v1 defender, particularly standing up, that we probably have in this country. She would have likely been called up. She had a knock in camp. For the Red Stars preseason. And so I think just as a precaution, they sort of had her stay domestic this go round. But I would hope after what we saw on Saturday, she's coming in June, as long as she's healthy.
She should be. She better be.
Yeah, we wanted to shout her out because, again, in a 0-0 game, defense tends to shine and defenders don't get enough love. So we definitely wanted to do that. I think in the second half, Chicago played a bit better. They had, I think, the better runs with the ball, with Gaudreau and Watt and some of their other forwards getting up and into the box. Just really not great finishing.
Yeah, and Casey was even serving some balls.
Yeah, she was.
But no finishing was happening. There was no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, so she was passing them in from the back line. I think that's sort of been a knock on her. But I think she's pretty good at it, actually. She's probably not the best fullback we have in terms of that. but she's definitely able to service in decent balls and mm-hmm. get it to the midfield or get it to the front line when needed. We also had, speaking of vocabulary, a heat check moment.
Yeah, we did. We had a Shea Butter heat check by the great Sarah Gordon.
Yes.
This happened in the first half, I believe, where Sarah came to come defend Shea Groom running in the box. And, well, somehow, in some kind of mystical, magical way, Sarah actually got thrown, where her leg was almost trapped under Shea Groom, and then Shea Groom tried to flop. And the referee saw the whole thing and was just like, no, get up. And, well, in the process of getting up, Sarah Gordon had a couple of words. Yeah. A whole heat check, because she had to let her know. Like, this ain't the business. This ain't what it's going to be. Don't do that again. And so, props to you. Kudos to you, Sarah, for not only laying some bricks yourself, but checking.
Yeah.
Let them know what it, let the people know what it's going to be.
Yeah, we keep it PG on this show, but if Sarah Gordon, if you ever want to come on and tell us what you said, we'd be happy to have you.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, so that, I mean, there wasn't a lot to that game. Like I said, it was 0-0, or like you said too. It wasn't the greatest first game. A lot happened in the second game.
Oh,
if we want to talk about
it. We got to Portland, where we entered the NWSL after dark, which is basically when the NWSL acts a fool in terms of the games, particularly that happen in the late o'clock hours. Actually, you can kind of even say that it happens on the East Coast too, but it's called NWSL after dark, because when the East Coast is falling asleep, the West Coast turns up, and particularly the West Coast games, these games tend to be crazy and foolish. And this is it's appropriate because it's Portland Thorns playing the Kansas City NWSL team. Is that their?
Yeah. I think that's their official name. Yeah.
Why is that though?
They are that because right now, they recently relocated to Kansas City from Utah, which originally they relocated to Utah from Kansas City. So it's a whole cycle.
Yeah.
Having said that, any iteration of this Kansas City team and Portland is a rivalry. They do not like each other. Their games are always contentious. This game was no different, though it didn't start off too bad.
Nah, it was just a lively situation initially.
Yeah. Yeah, so you had Portland playing in front of fans for the first time in almost 2 years. And if you don't know, under normal circumstances and non-pandemic times, Portland always sells out. They have one of the liveliest fan bases in all of soccer, no gender required. So, it's a wild place to play. And their fans were excited to see some football, and they were not disappointed. Again, Portland was missing a decent amount of national team players, including Crystal Dunn, Lindsay Horan.
That's crazy. Wait, timeout. That's on the same team?
Yeah. I mean,
and Sophia
Portland
Smith
is the favorite. Like, let's just...
Wait. We forget. Sophia Smith is on that team, too.
She is. So,
Jesus, man.
Yeah, Portland's definitely the...
Wait. And Becky Sauerbrunn.
Yeah. Like, they're loaded. They're loaded, and they're the favorites. I think everybody pretty much agrees on that. And a lot of people playing don't like Portland, so that always adds to it, right?
Yep.
It helps to be the villain. However, they came out playing really well. Megan Klingenberg was captaining the squad during this game. She is a World Cup winner, I believe an Olympic gold medalist, and normally plays outside back. But this game played in the midfield. I think Portland deployed basically a diamond in their midfield, and she was sort of the back part of that diamond, though she snuck up on the wing every once in a while. And that was really good for her to be able to partner with particularly Rocky Rodriguez, former Herman Trophy winner, now playing for the Thorns, Costa Rican national. And it got them their first goal, I believe. Pretty goal, actually.
It was pretty.
And it was working for Portland. And again, not their strongest team. And they were pretty dominant most of that first half. One of our players to watch, Simone Charlie, had a pretty good first half as well. Mm-hmm. Really good movement on the ball. Really starting to figure out how to do runs and move off the ball as well to get open and distribute the ball in passing lanes and that kind of thing. So I'm really excited to see her development. Friendly reminder, though, she is a young player. We'll get to that in a second. And also shout out to Marissa Everett,
because she almost had a beautiful Shea Butter bomb. Ooh, it was called offsides, but man, it was real, real pretty. Yeah. It was so pretty. It should have been onsides. But it was almost a beautiful Shea Butter bomb debut. That might be need to be a new term because this is going to repeat later in the episode. But it was almost a beautiful goal. So we must acknowledge the Stallions and Marissa Everett. She was balling.
Yeah, she had a really good showing in this match. And shout out again to the Shea Butter delegation. We actually had two Black goalkeepers in this game, which is pretty rare in this league. So shout out to Adriana French, AD, for everybody in the know. A World Cup winner herself and has been hurt for quite a while. So it was really nice to see her back and playing. And she played very well. Obviously, she's one of the best goalkeepers in the country.
Yeah, for Portland Thorns, by the way.
Yeah, for Portland Thorns, again, loaded. Yeah. And then Abby Smith for Kansas City, playing, really getting a shot out here. So we're really excited to see her. But we talked about Simone Charlie earlier. And there was a little Shay on Shay crime, if you will.
Oh, Lord.
Simone Charlie pretty much ran screaming into Abby Smith, which got her first yellow card.
Yes.
As it happens in soccer, probably not the best challenge in the world or the best take in the world from Simone Charlie. And this is significant because once we get to the second half, Portland scores, but Kansas City's playing a lot better, particularly toward the end of that first half.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to get a goal from the indomitable Amy Rodriguez, or A-Rod, as she is known affectionately. Mm-hmm. And they're able to get it to 2-1. And they really played well. Like, Kansas City played a lot better than I think I expected them to. So it ended up being a really good match. Yeah, Tyler Lucy headed in the second goal, and then Amy Rodriguez counters and scores. And then Simone Charlie gets another yellow, which results obviously in a red card.
Yep.
For a challenge that probably wasn't as bad as it looked initially. I do think she got the player, but you also can't go in recklessly like that.
Yeah, on a yellow.
On a yellow. And again, that's something that young players tend to do. They don't always make good decisions. And so.
Wait. So if you don't know, if you get a red card, that means you're out the game.
Yeah.
And you're suspended out that the next game.
And the next game, actually.
Yeah, and this is important because that's when you knew we were now in the NWSL After Dark. Because at this point, the game was getting kind of rough. Like we said, this is a rivalry. They were ready to go to war. And it was escalating. It was heating up. The fans was in it.
Yeah.
And the stadium got really upset when Simone got sent off.
It did. And the referee in general seemed to have lost a bit of control in the match. And that's been a complaint, I think, of players in particular about refereeing in this league for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some spoke about that afterwards. And that's a fair complaint. And I think something the league needs to look into. But yeah, not everybody in Portland was happy with Simone's second yellow resulting in a red, including her coach, who himself got a red card.
Yeah, it's quite quick because I was like, uh-oh. Because actually, when I saw that happen on TV, I was like, man, I'd be mad. I wonder what Mark Parsons is going to say. And then next thing I know, I see a red card. And I was like, uh-oh, this is about to, is it going to be a brawl?
Right.
It happened a few minutes later.
Yeah, it keeps de-escalating, right? For those not in the know who are new to soccer, coaches rarely get red cards. So, you know, it's pretty serious. And he probably had a lot to say for the ref to pull that card out.
Yeah, because he didn't even get a yellow. It was a straight red.
Straight red. So it had to be wild. I'm sure it was colorful. I'm sure he'll probably have to cut a check for what he said.
Yeah.
But okay, I understand defending your players. You know, he's a coach, ride or die. Can't be mad at that. And then a few minutes later, keeping in mind Portland's still up 2-1 and pretty much just trying to kill the game, gets the ball in the corner. Another high draft pick, Morgan Weaver, has come into the game at that point. And she and one of her teammates, I apologize, it was hard to see at first who it is, are in the corner battling for the ball with, is it Christy Edmonds?
Kristen Edmonds.
Kristen Edmonds, sorry. Kristen Edmonds and I believe one other Kansas City player is over there for a moment. But as you do at the end of the game, when you kill it, trying to kill the ball and go, you know, go home with the win, it gets pretty rough in that corner. It's just a battle for the ball. You got a lot of hacking at feet and things of that nature because you're all on top of each other trying to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it got a little feisty and the ball finally gets out of that corner. I think Edmonds had probably gotten Weaver at some point, but once the ball is out, they both go to the ground, mostly because Weaver kind of has her arm wrapped around Edmonds and has to take out to take her down.
But even before that, in the corner, they were like kind of bodying Edmonds.
Yeah. And which even is with, expected, but yeah.
Wait. I will say this. Even if you don't know, Kristen Edmonds used to play for the Orlando Pride, if I remember correctly. And previously, Kristen Edmonds has had some colorful vibes with the Portland Thorns.
Yeah.
Where she's been bodied a lot. And so it's been, Portland Thorns can be very physical. And yeah, it was quite physical in that corner, but continue on.
Yeah, absolutely. And keeping in mind the last time these two teams played, Kansas City was Utah, and it was an incredibly physical game that also resulted in some red cards and near fights. So we're serious when we say this is a rivalry and a really intense one. But yeah, they both go to ground. They get up. I believe Weaver might have inadvertently, or I don't know, could have been intentional, got Edmonds slightly in the face. So Edmonds got her back a lot more intentionally in the face. And there's some jawing. I will give Weaver credit as a young player. I think she realized pretty early on that only one of them was a Stay Ready All-Star. Shout out to Bobby Jones. So she sort of ducked and went about her business.
She wasn't about that Shea Butter Heat check.
Yeah, I don't think she was going to win that one. And sometimes, you know, you got to make a good business decision. And so she did that. However, the ref pulled red cards for both of those players. So Morgan Weaver and Kristen Edmonds were sent off. And of course, this incenses the crowd even more. They're still riled up from the Simone Charlie and Mark Parsons red cards. And it's just a lot of chaos. And the referee really did lose control of the match. It ends 10 players against 9. It still ends up 2-1. And now you have several players that won't be playing for either team next game. So that changes the dynamic, of some of what's going to be done tactically. Again, keeping in mind that there's national team players missing from both clubs. So they have to make even more adjustments now. And some of their better players are gone, or their better outlets and options and things like that. And I think just the biggest thing about this game, and I'm touching on it really briefly, is what happened after, right? I think, and we'll talk about racism later, because of course we will. But the idea of sort of labeling Morgan Weaver, who is a white player, blonde, tall, sort of prototype, which you would look like or look for in the past, I think, in American soccer. Kristen Edmonds is a Black woman. And Morgan Weaver was very much painted as innocent in this scenario, which is always triggering, I think, particularly in these times. And the Thorns decided to show clips of what happened, and it actually was more incriminating toward Morgan Weaver than less.
Right.
Morgan Weaver, who, by the way, full discretion, and Kristen Edmonds as well, neither one of them really said anything afterwards, right? Like, it was more teams and social media and things of that nature that kept perpetuating it. And the Thorns social media team decided to go with it, I think, and keep it up for probably engagement purposes without necessarily paying attention to the language around it. And unfortunately, it seems to have led to harassment, racial abuse in particular of Kristen Edmonds online. So, you know, the league's got to own that, and a team has to own that. You're not protecting your players. These players are all coworkers at the end of the day, right? Kristen Edmonds and Morgan Weaver trying to do the exact same thing, right? Which is play professional soccer. And it gets heated in the game, but I don't think either one of them wants the other to be unsafe. Unfortunately, in this league, when things go south, it's often the Black and brown players that suffer. And so Kristen Edmonds shouldn't have had to deal with that at all this weekend.
Not at all.
Simply doing her job. She made a mistake. Obviously, she's gotten a red card. She'll probably get an additional game. Yeah. She probably did commit the more egregious offense. But the way it was labeled, the way it was framed, really just set her up for being exposed. And that's exactly what happened. And so we really got to think about these things and how we lay it out. And we'll get back to this stuff that happened this weekend in terms of race and some other things in a little bit. But we do want to make sure we're giving time to the other games that happened on Saturday. You want to help jump into that?
Okay, so then on Saturday, we had the Stallions of the North Carolina Courage and the Washington, D.C. Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the underdogs of the I can't even say that with a straight face. North Carolina Courage, which used to be stacked, by the way. They used to have Crystal Dunn, Sam Uys, Abby Del Kepper, Lynn Williams, Jessica McDonald, Dabinia. That's a lot of play. That's stacked.
Right.
They were stacked. And so they won they're like a dynasty, basically. And so, yeah, they've lost quite a few players due to player movement all over the place. And so, yeah, they're embracing this underdog role. But they still stacked a little bit.
Yeah.
And they were playing the Washington Spirit, who, you know, they were doing their thing, where they got the acquisition of a future superstar.
But they did. And a couple of defenders who, of course, are missing for national team action. Yeah. And their midfielder as well.
Yes. And Andy Sullivan, and then Emily Sonnet and Kelly O'Hara.
Yeah.
But I guess with this game, this was quite a fun game.
Yes.
It started off immediately where North Carolina Courage were feeling like the underdogs, because Yokoyama scored a goal in the first 5 minutes.
Yes.
That was a beautiful goal.
It was really, really nice. It was a really nice run and finish from her. But, you know, North Carolina is still North Carolina.
Exactly.
So they answered. Shout out to Jessica McDonald, obviously member of the Shea Butter delegation. Shout out to Dabinha, one of our favorite Brazilians, one of our favorite players. They really sort of had their way. It looks like Washington's still figuring out some of their new formation. And so maybe that's where some of the holes and you know, lapses in coverage came. But Jessica McDonald and Dabinha, Christy Hamilton, and the acquisition of Carson Pickett was really having their way in the offensive half and the offensive third for North Carolina. And it led to a Jessica McDonald equalizer on a really nice finish. Shea Butter bomb for sure.
Yeah. She also assisted the other goal to Hamilton.
Yes.
She had a Shea Butter dime.
Yeah. So Jessica McDonald was definitely having herself a game against
J-Mac was balling.
Yeah. And the Courage were going, and I believe they went up 2-1. No, 2. Yeah.
Yeah, two. Yeah, it was 2-1. Because then also Dabinha was mic checking to the left and to the right. She honestly should have had some goals, but it wasn't coming. But she was out there.
Shea, I mean, Butter, always. Dabinha's always gonna at least try one or two a game, just because she's Dabinha. So that's what we love about her. But yeah, North Carolina seemed pretty in control. Washington was having a little bit better of a second half, I think, still trying to find space and get sort of in front of goal. And so they bring in their number two draft pick, Trinity Rodman, who, I think is sort of the, in terms of strikers, young strikers, the next big thing, has been touted as such. Go Cougs, by the way. We're very sad that she's not playing here, but happy for her all the same. She deserves to be a pro. And she came on in second half, around the 60th minute, something like that.
She was Shea Butter styling. Good God.
She Shea Buttered everything, right? Like, she just very quickly lived up to the hype. She's just a joy to watch. Like, I'm even more pleasantly surprised than I expected to be. She was one of our players to watch last week. Did not disappoint, obviously. Her first goal happened during this game. It was a pass from the defensive half, or the defensive third, I think, of their field from a teammate while she's making a run past the back line. Please go watch this goal. Like, the first touch that she takes off of that pass is ridiculous. Like she's been doing it forever.
Right.
And the finish is beautiful. She absolutely reads the goalkeeper and is able to slot it in exactly where she is not. And it's just a really professional goal and just a level of talent that I don't think I expected to see from an 18-year-old. Who hasn't quite figured it all out yet, but she's already pretty terrifying for somebody who
hasn't. Was a Shea Butter bomb that had the sounds of success.
Yeah, sounds of success sounds like a good one for that, but just really smooth. And she had some other moments. Shout out to Andre from Diaspora United for pointing that out. What did he see?
He saw this beautiful cutback that I had to go, whoa, Kristen Press?
Yeah, she's definitely given me Kristen Press Jr. vibes. If you don't know, she's mentioned in several interviews. The player that she probably looks up to the most is Kristen Press. And just in terms of studying her game, a little bit of Tobin Heath in there as well. But you can see it if you watch her play. Like, if you followed Kristen's career, you can definitely see it when Trinity Rodman plays. She's very much her own player, but yeah, you can see the influence all around. And a dream of ours here is Shea Butter is for them to play together. So
yes, it's quite soon. Quickly, we'll see. Swiftly.
Yeah, we'll see.
But I mean, even on the field, she was like calling for balls, placing. Yeah. She was passing beautiful passes.
Yeah, it's not just
that should have been Dom's.
It's not just the play. It's not just the play. It's the mannerisms. It's everything. So it's really interesting to see that. And having watched soccer long enough to see a young player emulate a player that came before them. So
right.
We're really excited about Trinity Rodman. So she might come up a little bit later. We'll see.
Yeah.
And then we can get into this last game, which was Racing Louisville, which is the newest club.
Yes.
And the Orlando Pride, our favorite, you should be better than you are team.
Yes.
So I'm going to let you go because you got some thoughts on that Orlando formation. Is that what we're calling it?
Yeah. So... So word on the street, Orlando had lost a couple of games, preseason games, to particularly they lost to Florida State. Mm-hmm. Which you don't know, Florida State is a really, really good college team, but they have a bunch of soon-to-be pros on there. So that could be expected. But I was like, what is going on? Because it makes no sense. Because even if you don't have Alex Morgan, you don't have some other people on international duty, you still have Marta, you still have Ashlyn Harris, you have Allie Krieger, mm-hmm. Allie Riley. Like, you have a bunch of phenomenal players. Sydney LaRue, like, you have a bunch of phenomenal players. What is going on? Is it a formation issue? And well. As we hear the games launched off, they tell the formations, and they let us know Orlando is in a 4-2-3-1, which I was like, that's bizarre. What is that going to look like? I'm not sure if on the TV screen they had said that Louisville was lining up in a 4-2-2-2-2. But yeah, that started what then where you thought Orlando would have an easy game against a Louisville team, to be quite frank, has a bunch of players they had to sign on contract because they had a horrible expansion draft where they drafted about four players who were never going to suit up. Then they drafted weirdly where you were missing like literally position groups that they had to go get positions, probably had to beg their draft pick to come play and not go back to school. And so you had a lot of stuff going on where it was like, what is this team going to look like, you know? And so, but you have this Orlando team that honestly probably could have won the Challenge Cup last year if they were healthy and didn't have the COVID outbreak, that even if you're missing Alex Morgan, you still should beat Louisville.
Yes.
But in the beginning, this crazy little situation with the 4-2-3-1, which it kind of wasn't really that. It was like a four, I don't know. It was a four, whatever's happening in the midfield as a disaster class, and then a one that left Sydney LaRue isolated. It was just crazy because this 4-2-2 formation from Louisville caused all kind of havoc in the midfield for Orlando. And so, yeah, it was, they were getting worked. And it was like the back line was getting flooded. And so Allie Krieger was having to be midfielder.
Yes.
A fullback. You had Allie Riley having to do the same thing. Marta was dropping so far back.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
To try to make up what was happening in the midfield. So she couldn't even help Sydney LaRue, who got the ball and was trying to score. Yeah. It had this tall Cornick. She's super tall. Just having also, it was like crazy disjointedness that, well, eventually CeCe Kaiser scored her first goal in the league.
Yeah.
Off of this disarray for Racing Louisville. And then it was like, uh-oh, is Orlando about to get whipped? And so,
But having said that, they found a way to equalize because, as you mentioned, they have a 6-1 player in Corniak. And so they were able to simply whip the ball into the box, and the 6-1 player was able to head it in because you can't defend 6-1 on a set piece. It's very hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Sam Lewis or Wendy Renard. There's not a lot of players that can do that. And so despite everything, Orlando managed to go in 1-1 at the half, and they came out looking a little better in the second half, though it was a really long game and a lot of back and forth, and it didn't feel like a whole lot of opportunities were happening until one of the subs, Abby Kim, shout out to a member of the Shea Butter delegation, hit a rather unexpected Shea Butter bomb. It wasn't particularly in the run of play. Beautiful shot. Looked like it was off her right foot. Actually falling to the ground. To put Orlando up 2-1 in a game that I frankly didn't think they should have won or been up at any point. So despite everything, they were up 2-1. But again, NWSL After Dark, anything can happen.
Right.
Louisville's playing in front of their home crowd for the very first time. It's a beautiful stadium, by the way. So shout out to Louisville for investing in that. A whole lot of pyrotechnics and lights and things like that, particularly when players score. But they go in 2-1. And what happens here to get this last goal?
So it was like a stop. It's like a set piece disaster where I don't know. I was like, please don't score. But of course, Hendrick scores for Louisville in stoppage time, like literally probably the last few minutes of stoppage time. So yeah, they basically draw with Orlando at the last minute. And then it's like a pyrotechnic light situation, purple smoke all over. Yeah. It's like a freaking light show on the screen.
Yeah.
And yeah, the stadium goes berserk. It's like, yeah.
So Louisville drew in their very first NWSL game. So congratulations to the brand new club. If you don't know who Louisville is, go look up their kits. You probably can't miss them. We will give you our thoughts on NWSL kits in a future episode we hope to collab with. We'll save that for later. For sure. And on that note, though, that wraps up our coverage of the first weekend of the Challenge Cup in the NWSL.
The Chaos Cup.
Never, ever boring. So we're glad some of our favorite players are back and some of our teams are back, and that we get Shea Butter bombs and styles and dimes and all the other things that make bringing the culture to the game so great. And so after this break, we're going to get into fan favorite rants and raves, and we're going to drop our Shea Butter crossover listings that y'all can agree with because you should, or not, but because you will. So when we get that, we'll get into that. We'll catch y'all on the other side.
All right, good people. It's about that time for your favorite segment, them rants and them raves, where we're going to give our hot takes on terms of soccer and other cultural matters. And then we're also going to, celebrate some players in the process, deal with some of the foolishness of the racist variety that happened this week.
Mm.
But then we're also, after that, we're going to jump into a beautiful segment called the Shea Butter Crossover. It's going to be, you'll see it every now and then. But anyway, well, let's get into it. So as we do, we start with the rants first.
Yes.
I guess it's my, should I go?
I think you can get started.
All right. So let's talk about this. So the last week, we didn't have time to acknowledge it, but the NCAA had a basketball tournament for the women's and men's. And so basically, a frustrating rant that I have is that the continuous attempt by media in this age where Black lives are supposed to be mattering to not really show flowers, respect, and love to Black players and uphold and uplifting white people in the game at the expense of Black excellence and continuously doing it repeatedly. So I particularly point to, on the women's side, it is a travesty we did not hear about Ari McDonald.
Yeah.
And the Arizona University of Arizona basketball team.
Yeah.
And they're bombness. She's been bomb for all season. Was Pac-12 player of the year, Pac-12 defensive player of the year, and literally was bomb. As with so many other teams, with Baylor, University of South Carolina, a whole bunch of teams with a lot of greatness weren't getting any props. And they were predominantly African-American. Have African-American coaches, Don Staley, Adia Barnes. And like, you weren't hearing the props or getting the love. In fact, they didn't include Arizona in one of the clips, which probably was the detriment of UConn, because they got smoked.
Yeah.
Or even talking about, not even giving the props to like a Baylor, who, if you knew about Dede Richards, you should have known that Paige might have got shut down. Paige Buckner's, who has been this highly touted player from UConn.
Yeah, and it's legitimately good. Like, that's
Paige
Buckets is what they call her, Paige Buckets.
Paige Buckets is legit. Yeah. But even then, you were ignoring the greatness of the other players on her team, and Kristen Williams in particular. And it's like, she doesn't exist in a vacuum. Like, she's a whole, she has team members supporting her. So it's super frustrating. Because, you know, people were irritated because, like, you didn't know because they weren't given the flowers, given the kudos, given the props. And this is a repetitive process that happens, particularly in the world of basketball, where you don't give Black players props. And same thing happened on the men's side. If you would advertise more about Baylor, then everybody could have had their brackets right, because those are grown men. Because, yeah, y'all were hyping up Gonzaga, but then they ran into some grown men. The last two games, Baylor did that. And if you would have had the real conversations and you could have seen the stallions of what they were doing, you would have known that these men were going to win that game. And so we got to do better. Give the Black people props. Give them love. Show them love. And respect the hustle. And this leads to the second portion of my rant, which is check the tape. See the tape of these Black players and respect them. Do what you do for the white mediocre players that y'all try to say is really, really good.
Oh, okay.
Did I go there? But you need to give props to the Black players and the credit that they do. And if they look good on film, so if they have minimal interceptions in their college football career, they are probably, and if they honestly would have played longer, they might have been better than Trevor Lawrence. Then Justin Fields is probably the second best quarterback in the upcoming draft. Yeah. So you need to draft him if you can get him and you need a quarterback, because he is. Don't try to explain your way into trying to justify other players who didn't look good on film. Yeah. And Justin Fields looked good on film and in person and in workouts. And so it's like, draft him, quit playing yourself. Similar with Ari McDonald. Like, don't sit here and not draft her, Dallas Wings, because you get caught up in somebody else. Dallas Wings has a bajillion picks. And homie, the greatness that is Vicky Johnson. I love you, VJ. Like, please, as the coach, do what you got to do to make sure you get her on your team. Don't, because, you know, they got Arike in the draft a couple years ago when all these teams let her drop to 8 and get the Dallas Wings, and she went off.
Yeah.
And was she rookie of the year? I think so.
That
year, or some, almost was number 2 then.
Yeah.
But when you see the tape, you see the game film, you see she's ready for the WNBA, draft her. Draft Justin Fields, draft Aaron McDonald, draft all these players that you see that are doing the damn thing, and respect them and show them love. And that's my rant on that. What's your rant?
What's my rant? I mean, we highlighted a lot of what happened in WSL, but they've had a rough couple weeks. And I think I just want to chat for a quick second. Y'all still aren't doing a real good job of protecting your Black players. You're not doing a very good job of protecting your Black players. So we mentioned Sarah Gordon earlier, and after that game in Houston, an incident happened that she later tweeted about. In regards to her boyfriend, who is a Black man, for full disclosure here, and how they were essentially targeted by security in the Houston Nash Stadium. And they were basically followed, questioned, exchanged words with the security guard. And as they're both looking around, particularly Sarah, seeing that there are other players, white players, who are having the same interactions with family, friends, loved ones, whoever they may be, in the stadium and aren't getting the same treatment. And so she brought this to the attention of social media, and people sort of rallied behind her to the point where the Dash had to make a statement, which they could have kept, quite honestly. But essentially that statement said it wasn't racially motivated, that security had been instructed to basically enforce COVID protocol throughout the stadium. The issue with that, again, though, is it was the Black player and her Black boyfriend. It wasn't the white players and their white whoever, right? And this was followed up by another member of Chicago coaching staff, I believe, or the staff in general, basically validating Sarah Gordon's story, not that she needed it, but explaining what he saw, which was that she was being profiled, and that he really couldn't sit there and sort of let that fester. And so he also spoke up. Houston hasn't had a response to that. Also, a friendly reminder, Houston has had previous incidents with racism in the not so distant past. And so their track record on this is pretty much 0-2 right now. So they've got some work to do, right? I would like to hear a follow-up response for them and what that's going to look like. I would say including that security person needs to go, right? Like, because I don't imagine that's a one-off for that person. I don't think that was a spur of the moment thing. That might have something to do with how they actually think in real life. So, and you don't want that for an organization, again, that's trying to distance themselves from some of the issues that they've had in the past. But the best way through it is through it, right? You got to deal with it and deal with your organization and make sure it's a lot less racist place in a particularly Black city, right? Like, that's the irony of the Houston part. Houston's pretty Black. Some of your biggest names from Houston are Black women at that. So just saying, you might want to lean into that a little bit and do better. And just pointing out as well, these are not isolated incidents. The same racial undertones happened, obviously, with the Portland, Kansas City game and the Weaver Edmonds incident. And just sort of the wording and framing of that, particularly by the Portland Thorns, right? And they're, I would say, social media team more than anything else. But I think Merritt Paulson was involved in this and other people, not the players themselves. But just the framing of that, when you have a Black player and a white player in an incident like this, and the white player is framed as innocent and the Black player is framed as aggressive, right? It's just really icky, particularly in 2021, when we've seen all of these Black people gunned down by police and other people, and non-white people in general with the murders in Atlanta and things of that nature. We've got to be really careful, right? Sports reaches a lot of people, particularly women's sports are growing by the day. They're, the NWSL and the WNBA both had ratings increases during the pandemic when all the other leagues did not. So there's a level of visibility to this league that's never existed before. And you got to be careful with the language, right? Because you're going to run out fans, you're going to run out players and coaches and potential future stars and lovers of the game and people who want to promote it and go to games. They're family friendly, all of these things. It could be, you're sort of shooting yourself in the foot on this one. And it's a continuing issue, right? Like, this isn't the first time.
No, it's not.
Cassius LaRue had this issue. This is a little boy, right? Like, he's what, 4, 5, something like that. It was even younger when that happened, but he was followed, right? He was profiled. Jeremiah McDonald, I'm assuming that's his last name, Jessica McDonald's son, another little Black boy, profiled in a stadium, right? Just going to see their moms. Like, that's not okay. They're kids, man. Like, y'all are racially profiling kids, and you're not letting little Black kids, particularly little Black boys, be kids, right? Who are there to see their moms play. They're dope Black moms who are just trying to set a good example, right? And be professional athletes and don't do harm to anyone. And are great ambassadors of the game. So they, on top of having to worry about playing and not feeling safe just as Black players, now have to worry about their children. And that's in addition to stadiums where people, Black players in particular, have been called racial slurs. I know Adriana France has spoken about this and a few other players have as well. Y'all got to do better. Y'all, it's racist. Like, you don't necessarily have to consider yourself a racist. I don't really care. What you're doing is racist. You're wearing a uniform. So you got to do better. Your Black players are not safe. And stop gaslighting Black people. Sarah Gordon told you it was racist. It's racist. It's not a question. It's not a conversation. Right. It's not about your feelings that somehow white people got centered this weekend. Even after a Black person told you what happened was racist, it came about white people. Like, this isn't it. And quite frankly, if you're not going to get your racism problem together, right, you're not going to get your whatever the heck that trans policy is for trans athletes that you have that isn't very good. And trans people have also told you as much, and non-binary siblings as well, who you completely, almost completely left out of it. If you're not going to get these issues together, then you get the league you deserve. Like, you're not going to get the international players. You're not going to get more Black and not brown and not white players. You're not going to grow your league in any way that is sustainable, and it will be what you deserve. So I want to root for the NWSL. I really do. I love the idea of having a domestic league with some of the best players in the world. I think we have one of the deepest talent pools in the world, and I want people to have a chance to play. And I want there to be several divisions of this, right? Like, I want there to be professional athletes at all levels of soccer, because soccer is for everyone. Act like it. Just do better.
Yeah, you need to get in touch with a diversity, equity, inclusion office. Y'all need one not only for the league, but then at each club.
Yeah.
So that you can have these conversations with your social media department, with your PR department, with everything, so you stop making these foolish mistakes that are correctable. And stop acting, because it's all showing me again for another week for me to say this, is you got these anti-racism books and they're on the shelf and they're just for decoration and for play. Yeah. And we need to do better in 2021.
You need to do better. Listen to your players, listen to your fans, right? They're telling you the way. Just own your mistakes. Say you're sorry. Don't make them again and do better. You're always, everybody's going to mess up, but it's what you do after that. Don't get in your feelings. It's not about your ego. It's about making the league better. And you either love soccer or you don't. And you either want it to be great or you don't. So that's all. And on that note, let's get into raves, because you know, I want to end on a down note.
Yeah, let's get into this Black excellence.
Yeah. Am I going first this time?
Yeah, you're going first. Tell the people what it is.
I mean, you know, I'm going to circle back to Trinity Rodman. I don't think I can describe to you how excited I am to watch this young lady play, hopefully for the next decade and some change. You know, at this point, I've lived enough life where I think I know it when I see it. And this is it. So she's a little bit different. And no, I don't want to rush the process, right? Like, I don't want to have a lot of pressure on her too fast. But she seems ready for the moment, for sure. And I think if you give her, you know, the season between the Challenge Cup and actual league play, and really let her experience what it is to be a professional athlete, I think she'll be good to go. Like, I really do. I think she's a very quick learner. She has a very high soccer IQ. She sees the field incredibly well for somebody who's 18. I know 28-year-olds who don't see the field, that well. And she's just got an incredibly unique skill set. And I'm just really hoping that this time around U.S. soccer does, right? By their Black players, right? With unique skill sets, or any player really with a unique skill set. And they've learned to adjust tactics and not settle on one way of playing soccer, because this one's too good to ruin. So let's get it together. Let's celebrate the talent we already see and the talent that's yet to come. And I'm very excited to see her in the future. And I would say I'm going to see you at the World Cup, Trinity Rodman.
Oh, yeah, wait. You're going to see her at the World Cup, and you're also going to see
yes,
my rave for the week, Breonna Pinto.
Yeah.
This young woman has been balling. She got drafted by what is now Gotham FC. And she is she's a midfielder, a Black midfielder who has been balling. An offensive player of the week, like back-to-back weeks, weeks on top of weeks is every time I see a the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, UNC tweeting something, it's like a Breonna Pinto scored this hat trick, that she's balling in her last season before she joins the Stallions of the Shea Butter delegations of the Gotham FC. And so I gotta give her props, because she's out here doing the thing. She's doing it, trying to get her team, I guess, a national championship one more time before she bounces out. And you gotta respect it. Much love and flavor to you with the Stallions. You out here doing that Shea Butter thing.
Yeah,
from the styles to the dimes to everything, to the bombs. You're doing it. Keep doing your thing, mama. We're looking forward to seeing you in the league real soon. And also at the World Cup.
Yes.
I said what I said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think we know the next wave of players is coming, and she's definitely a part of it. And shout out to her. Like, we definitely see you. We're really excited to see you in the league. Shout out to the Pinto family, who's a fun time on Twitter. Mama Pinto, we're cool. We've loved y'all since draft night. And to her brother, who I believe just got signed as well. So they're a whole soccer family for the culture. And we're really excited to see them.
Hey.
So we got one more little thing to do here.
Yep. And so I guess we need to start into the the last segment, which is the Shea Butter crossover.
Hey.
And so crossover, you know, in basketball is one thing, but oh, how convenient for us to use that descriptor for the conversation we had randomly one day where we were like, what soccer players could we compare? You know, what are their equivalents in the NBA and WNBA?
Yes.
And so, let's share the people with the people in our Shea Butter crossover segment. who we think various prominent soccer players' counterparts are in the WNBA and NBA, and the reasons why. And I guess we can kick it off with like a Crystal Dunn.
And do Crystal Dunn first.
Yeah, we
Yeah, I think we probably thought way too much about this stuff, but we hope it's fun at least. We think we're right, obviously, but I'm sure y'all don't, so, or won't think we are. So yeah, let's do this. So we tried to do like one for one. So whatever soccer player we have one NBA, one WNBA. In a few cases, we have two. But Crystal Dunn, for me, NBA, she's LBJ because she can do everything.
LeBron James for those.
LeBron James, yeah.
And then in the WNBA, it's two. So we got a Ms. Maya Moore.
Yes.
And then even a throwback, a Tina Thompson. And the reason we're saying that is because Crystal Dunn is an all-encompassing, all-around bomb player. Can do defense and offense, similar to all three of these players that we named, and legendary. And if you don't know about Tina Thompson, she is what several players say was one of the best players they've ever played with anywhere. Not just with the Comets, not with just the Houston Comets, RIP, but with any team she's been on, they've been like, she is like a GOAT. That's the GOAT.
Yeah.
And then you had the same thing when Maya Moore was playing for the time she was playing with the Minnesota Lynx.
Yes.
It's a big part of why they had a dynasty a few years back. So, yeah. Crystal Dunn, that's our comparison. Who's next?
I believe we're doing CP23, Kristen Press.
Hey!
This one was actually kind of easy, particularly for the NBA. To me, she's Steph Curry with the shot, boy.
Yep. And then from a WNBA perspective, one, Rebecca Hammond, also known as Becky Hammond, and that's a throwback. Let's explain to why we picked these two individuals for the comparison for Kristen Press.
All right. I got her as Steph Curry because obviously she can pop shots from distance, probably better than almost anybody in the world. And so you have to respect it. You've got to come out and defend. And if you do that, she's pretty fast. And probably has better ankles than Steph Curry. But she can blow by you. She can get the ball off on one of those shea butter dimes. Or, you know, she can draw defenders, pass it out. She can take the shot off the run. Like you said, she can shoot from distance. And she's just a good distributor of the ball. But she's always looking to shoot first. And that's pretty much Steph Curry in a nutshell. She similar, probably doesn't have as many rings as Steph Curry.
But right, yeah. But she's similar also to Becky Hammond. And people think coach Becky Hammond. But the legend was the New York Liberty, then San Antonio Silver Stars, Becky Hammond. She was initially a shooting guard that then became point guard. And so she was looking to shoot first and kicking people up, even despite, you know, people go, we'll see with all three of these players, people think that they're innocent and they're not going to be ruthless, but no,
they don't look the part. Yeah.
They will cut you up. They will dice you up. So there's plenty of times of take that Becky Hammond was shooting from out the gym on tall trees, like a fave Candace Parker. I had to put it out.
Yeah, she got her welcome to the league on that one.
Yeah, she got welcome to the league a few times by Becky. Becky's crossed people up. Becky's put crazy points up, put shots that nobody can defend with that English that was unstoppable to block.
Yeah.
Clutch, coming out, shooting stuff at the last minute. Like, the game should be lost. She's out here hitting bombs, doing things. Becky was balling.
Yes.
And so, yeah. Those are the two comparisons we have for Kristen Press.
Yes.
I guess the next one we got, Midge Purse.
Miss Margaret. Yes. Madam President. Midge was actually a little bit complicated at first.
Yeah.
Because if you're following, particularly the national team, you know, and even at her time in Portland, she's playing out of position. Midge is a natural forward. And she's playing a lot of right back, left back these days, except for a club team. Shout out to Gotham for freeing Midge, we appreciate you. But yeah, I think we settled on particularly Chicago, Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you free her, she could be Miami Jimmy Butler.
She could.
It's similar to Kayla McBride, is how she's being used, how she was being used at the Las Vegas Aces.
Mm.
She was being not used correctly to be, but now she's about to play for the Minnesota Lynx.
Yes.
With one of her old college teammates. And like, Cheryl Reed's probably going to have a phenomenal team. And y'all just let the Lynx re-up.
Yeah, they're definitely one of the threats, I think, this season for sure. Because, again, that seems fair. A team that wins a lot gets all the players. So,
Midge Purse is probably that be our comparisons. Then we got, let's see, Sam Mewis.
Samantha. I like to call Samantha, she's a very good player, very direct player. One of those that isn't a looked apart person, right? Sam Mewis doesn't look like she should be good at soccer necessarily, or certainly not as a midfielder. So I think comparatively, I have her, her male or NBA, I should say, counterpart is Joker, because that dude is cold and he looks nothing like a dude who should be cold at basketball, but he's in the MVP conversation this year for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's Jokic, for those who don't know, plays for the Denver Nuggets. Sorry.
Right, right. So with Roosevelt, our comparison was Steve Nash and Katie Smith. And if you don't know who Katie Smith was, she was a balling player for the WNBA. And yes, she was a problem. Like, I think Sue Bird pointed out multiple times, like, she was a problem. And it's funny, like, people didn't think she was really, really nice, but she's super duper nice. Nice, nice, nice with it. And similar to Steve Nash and Katie Smith, Rose does all this creativity, can be sniping, can just take over a game. And both of them did that. And so that's absolutely our comparison for Roseville.
Yeah, and I think, again, sort of not looks the part. They all kind of look like good Steve Nash is Canadian, but they all kind of look like good Midwestern kids who will cut you up. So you don't see it coming. So that's the fun of watching them play ball. They all were ridiculously creative in their day and pretty ruthless as well. And Roosevelt is currently. So I hope she keeps cooking in that particular vein of player. And then, this is the hot take one, right?
Yeah, this is the hot take. This is the last controversial. So understand, we will circle back to the, so there, we got more players on the list, but yeah, for the interest of time. But for our last one, this was hard. We kind of need your help, but we're going to start some controversy. Alex Morgan. And so Alex Morgan is a nine, and she's good at being a nine.
Yes.
And so she does what she needs to do. And like, you can even see in the game Saturday that she does it pretty well. And if she's where she needs to be, you put her at the nine.
Right.
And so it was hard to find one for the WNBA, so that's where we need your help. But our NBA comparison is Klay Thompson.
Killer Klay. Yeah, I think for at least my thinking on that is, right, oftentimes she's not necessarily the best on the field, but there are times when she could take over a game. I think particularly peak Alex Morgan, right, like 2017, 2018, and just her ability to dominate, even if she didn't get a lot of touches, right? I think Klay's had games where, like, almost every touch he's had, the ball's gone in. And so he can just go off on a night, but he plays with Steph Curry, right? And
right.
So that means a lot of times he's not necessarily going to be, quote unquote, the best player on the team. Mm-hmm. But he's really good and they need each other. And so I think Alex is that for a few of the players on our team, right? She's sort of that anchor, that outlet, you know, like we talked about in the game Saturday, somebody who can hold up the ball, but is also a threat at goal scoring. So defenses have to honor that. And when she's in her bag, she's in her bag. So you're not always going to know when that's going to be. It can be a little streaky at times.
Right.
But yeah, when she's in her bag, she's still one of the best. So that's probably a hot take. We'll see. That's no disrespect to Klay. We love Klay Thompson here. Klay Thompson. Ooh, sorry. Cougs, don't kill me, Cougs. I'm sorry. I'm tired. but yeah, we love Klay here. I think he's one of the better ones I've seen in a very long time, certainly at shooting. So that's nothing but love in that regard. So you disagree. Well, we're sure.
Yeah.
For sure, we'll hear from you. So
yeah, y'all are gonna let us know. Y'all gonna be in the DM. Y'all gonna have a lot of tweets. Y'all gonna have a lot of hot takes. Y'all gonna be in your feelings. But that's cool. That's fine. We can discuss it, and we can get into it and reveal other parts of our list in the upcoming weeks with a couple of other lists that we have.
Yeah, we got some other stuff coming.
So I guess next week, I guess we should let y'all know before we bounce up out of here. We're gonna get into the second round of international friendlies. We're gonna talk about the redemption class or the disaster class that is the U.S. playing France. We'll cover the three upcoming games this week of the NWSL, including the stylings of the first look of the second part. Well, a team that has a lot of the Shea Butter delegation in the OL range.
Hey.
And then we'll cover the WSL overcrossing the pond, their Women's FA Cup that's happening. Some games are happening next Sunday. And then we're going to cover all the Shea Butter bombs and all Shea Butter like activities and everything in between. And hopefully we can go a week without any more racism.
I mean, you know, I'm not betting on it, but here's hoping.
So, well, until then, I guess we'll stay hydrated.
Oh, stay melanated.
And make sure the Black women in your life are celebrated.
And make sure your shea butter bombs are always elevated.
And yeah, with that said, have a great week. Stay blessed, stay fresh, and peace.
Peace out, everybody.